Good evening and blessings in the name of Jesus this evening. Trust that you are glad to be here and not that it's a drudgery. My heart has already been blessed with the songs that we have sung and the devotional. I don't know, I was especially impressed this evening with some of the songs, with all three of the songs actually. You know that song I've often sung that, Revive Us Again. Something that just stood out to me this evening, what is revival, who's it supposed to benefit? Well, I think it should benefit us, draw us closer to God, but that song would indicate that the reason for revival or the result of revival is for the glory of God. And so if we draw closer to Him, if our lives are more conformed to the image of His Son, that is for His glory. And so I trust that that is what we are, what we're working toward here. I would like to say I've been enjoying being here in beautiful Arkansas. Lovely weather. Like to take some of it home with me if you could box a little bit of it up for me to take home. It's really lovely. Been getting into some of your homes, and that's a privilege. Brother Joe took me around the community yesterday, and we drove around a number of places and back a lot of roads that would hardly even be classified as roads in our part of the country, and until I was thoroughly confused, but it was really nice. Appreciate that. And today, Phil's took me over to the Ozark Folk Center and found out how people used to do in how they could live without electricity, and very, very interesting craftsmen. Many of you have probably seen that. So I've been enjoying this, and but I'm also enjoying getting into the Word, and we want to do that again this evening. But before we do that, would you lead our song for us, please?
Follow the track of the good.
Well, I trust that the Master is calling, and I trust that we are following. And that's what we are interested in here this week. This evening, I would like to maybe take just a little different approach to what we've been talking about, a little different subject material. And I'll explain where I'm coming from, and then we'll see where we go from there. But last week I was at the Payette Church in Idaho for Bible conference, and there was one subject that was assigned to me. I hadn't really thought about it so much for a time of revival, but the more I got into that subject, and since I gave it there and thought about it more, I thought maybe it would be something that would be good to share here this evening. The subject has to do with bringing up children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. The subject title that was given to me is to bring them up, which we will look at Ephesians 6 here soon. And I got to thinking about that today. I believe today that if we are going to truly have revival in our churches, a lot of that is going to start in the home. And how the home is operated, how the fathers lead out. And fathers, this evening, you're going to pretty well be the one that I'm going to be talking to, some to the mothers. Young people, you can listen and see maybe how it should go when you get to that point. When I was asked to speak on this subject, I told the minister there that asked me about that, I said, you know, I think probably 30 years ago I would have had a lot more answers to that than I do today. And so I went through this subject, as you can imagine, I went down memories lane. And there were many good memories. There are some regrets. And you know, it really tugs at my heart. I'll have to admit, it tugs at my heart to realize that the days of active children in my home and the childish prattle are gone. But I will say this, not to my own benefit, but to the praise of the Lord and to the that He has worked in our family. I'm so thankful, so grateful that all 11 of my children are serving the Lord today, as far as I know. And many of the grandchildren have committed themselves to the Lord. And so I'm so thankful for that. And, you know, sometimes when we get to get the family together and everyone gets to reminiscing a little bit, they say, do you remember when Dad did so-and-so? Well, I sure don't remember, but they do. And from that, we find then that children are very impressionable. All right. So now, the last two evenings, we've talked about God and His knowledge of us and His care for us and how He sees us and how He understands and He corrects us. And last night, then, we talked about the about how people become so taken up with their own lives that they forget God. And so now this evening, we would like to talk about this foundational aspect of our requirement to follow in the footsteps of the Master. And you know, I've been concerned for the homes in our churches. And I believe as I go around the communities, around the nation, and in our setting, there's a lot of families with small children, and it blesses me to see this. And these families have children, and then maybe, you know, more children. And then we see all the youth and the new homes that are established. And so this evening, parents, I would like to throw out the challenge to you. Are you seriously taking this grave responsibility that God has given to you. You know, I see so many parents that it seems like they are maybe more engaged in the things of the here and now than they are in looking at eternal aspects. All right, let's begin then. I'd like to turn to Ephesians 6. I'm going to read the first 10 verses, and we will think particularly of the fathers. But you know, there's children, there's servants, there's masters that are spoken to here. And I think I'll just read this whole thing, and then we'll go back and look at the fathers. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Servants, be obedient to them that are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling and singleness of your heart as unto Christ, not with eye service as men pleasers, but as the servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with good will doing service as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that whatsoever good thing any man doeth, the same shall he receive of the Lord, whether he be bond or free. And ye masters, do the same things unto them, forbearing, threatening, knowing that your master also is in heaven, neither is there respect of persons with him. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. And I like that 10th verse there. Finally, my brethren, in the face of all this and the things that are required of us in our daily walk and in our homes and in our actions day by day, we need to be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. We all appreciate observing a family that is well ordered. I'm sure you're aware of that. And in fact, even our most ungodly neighbor is appreciative and will admire a family that portrays the results of being brought up respectfully, or to be respectful, responsible, and productive. And I believe that each of us sitting here this evening realizes that this does not just automatically happen. And you know, fathers, we cannot just set our children on a right path and then just put on autopilot and expect the end result to be what we had hoped or desired. To bring them up, according to Strong's, is to rear them to maturity, to cherish, to train, to nourish. And this is an awesome responsibility. To have in our care a soul, an eternal soul, that needs to be given back to God, a soul that is going to be accountable to God. This soul has been given to you for maybe 20 years, and you have that short time. Now, maybe 20 years seems like a long time, but it's not. You have that short time to nourish and to train and to bring up and to direct and to give guidance to this eternal soul. And so whether we want to admit it or not, the training and the cherishing and the nourishing is going to have a profound influence and impact on the child. It is not just showing the way to go. You know, we don't go out there and tell Junior, now you just go this way. But we need to show him the way. We need to say, come on, follow me, and we will walk this pathway together. We need to walk alongside. We need to give direction. We need to give counsel. And so the verse says that they are to be brought up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Now, nurture would have the thought of education, of training, by implication, disciplinary correction, chastening, instruction. Admonition would have the thought of calling attention to and maybe even a mild rebuke. And so I see from these definitions that a father is not an aloof figurehead. And fathers, if you are aloof from your children, you're missing a very great privilege as well as responsibility. The father needs to be actively engaged in the life of his child from a baby to an adolescent to an adult. Now this here says that Christian fathers should do nothing that would be cause for anger to rise up in a child. We could say that to provoke to wrath would be the thought of enraging. And I suppose there's different ways that this could be done. But I think if we have a heart of love and a desire to put our children on the right way, the right course, we will not do anything to make them angry. Now, having said this, I'd like to talk just a little bit to the mothers. Even though the father has been given the leading role in the home, the training and the discipline that the mothers, that you as mothers do, is so vital and helps the father to fulfill his duties. You know, my wife was such a help and such, she stood by me probably times when she really didn't feel like standing by me. Maybe that's not fair to say that. But she did stand by me, and I know there were times she didn't quite agree with some of the things that I saw and thought that ought to be done, but she never stood in the way. She always was supportive. And she molded the children's thoughts. I admired the way she took time with them. I'd come into the house, and I could see that there was mounds of work to be done yet before the day was over. And she didn't really have time to sit around and do anything other than get busy and get things put away and cleaned up in the house. But there she would be, sitting on the couch, reading a book. Not for her own enjoyment, but for the children. And she, to her, their learning and their understanding of truth was of much greater value than a spotless house. And I admire her to this day for how she spent time with the children and taught them the love of learning. And to this day, many of them are avid readers, and I think that has a lot to do with that. Her attitude and her responses to me instilled in the children a respect for their father that I could never have done without her help. I could not have gained that respect totally on my own, but she helped them to learn to respect her father and mothers. I think you have such a vital role to play in that. All right, fathers, let's go back to you. If you're going to bring them up, there's some characteristics that you need to have in your life. And what are you going to bring them up to? What is a measuring stick? I've got about 8 points here this evening, and maybe you despair when a preacher says he has that many points, but I'll try not to despair you too bad. There probably could be 25, maybe more than that, points that we ought to look at in a father bringing up his children. All right, the first one that I'd like to mention is that a father that's going to bring up his children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord must be a man of self-discipline. Until a man has control of his own life, he's not fit to be a father. And he needs to understand that his life, how he lives, what he does, what he says, how he thinks, is going to be an example to his children. Deuteronomy 4, verse 9 says, "Only take heed to thyself and keep thy soul diligently, lest thou forget the things which thine eyes have seen, and lest they depart from thy heart all the days of thy life, but teach them thy sons and thy sons' sons." You know, that kind of struck me a little bit. I have tried to teach my sons, but have I really taught my son's sons as I should. But you know, sometimes they'll come and say, "Grandpa, you know, what about this?" And I'm glad to talk to them. We need to realize that no matter how successful a man is in the world, if he fails in his home responsibilities, he is a failure. The decisions that a man makes after he's married, after he has children, no longer just affect himself, but they have consequences for the entire family, and may I say, they have consequences for not only time, but for eternity. Self must be put in the background. And you know, even the best of teaching, we could teach just without any error, but that is going to be undermined if we as fathers are inconsistent. If our conduct is inconsistent, if it's contrary to the principles that we have taught, You know, if parents knowingly violate church standards and the laws of the land, you might as well forget the respect of your child and his obedience in teenage years. And so the kind of person that a child is going to become depends on the adults he loves and admires or that he despises. And a child is going to be able to discern when a parent is living for himself or whether he is living a self-disciplined life, a life under the control of Jesus Christ. My second point is that a father that is going to bring up his children needs to be a man that loves. Now, maybe that seems just a little bit strange, but let me explain to you. I'd like to say this evening that one of the most important points of bringing up your children is to love your wife. If you don't truly have love for your wife, that child is going to not be able to connect the dots. I guess we'll put it that way. I'm going to read back in Ephesians 5. This is familiar. Ephesians 5, verse 25 and verses 28 and 29. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth, even as the Lord did the church. You know, don't we think of ourselves a lot? You know, we want to take care of ourselves. We want to feed ourselves. We want to get rest. We want to take a shower and get cleaned up and these things. And it says here that no man ever yet hated his flesh. But we need to love our wives more than we love ourselves. And even as Christ loved the church. Then there's another verse in 1 Peter 3, verse 7, that says this. Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, and as heirs, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. And so there is a thought of loving our wives. There is a thought of honoring them. Now, if we don't show attention to our wives, if we don't express appreciation, and if we don't help them to realize that they are the most important person in your life, except, of course, your relationship with God, won't there come a time when she will say, well, does he really love me? Well, how's your wife going to know if you love her? Well, maybe it's helping her with her busy schedule. Maybe help wash the dishes, sweep the floor, do whatever needs to be done to help her that way. And you know, brethren, I think you're probably all aware of this, but in case you're not, I'm going to tell you, a wife, just loves to get an arrangement of flowers. So don't be so stingy that you don't get her an arrangement of flowers once in a while. Tell her how much you appreciate her. How lovely she looks today. Even if the bloom of youth is past, there's still a beauty of character. You know, I noticed in my wife that she could have a hard day and maybe even feel discouraged and a little bit down. But just a few gestures of helpfulness and just a few comments of appreciation could just change her whole demeanor. And she could feel that support and encouragement from the man that loved her. And so the atmosphere of love will go a long way in giving stability and a sense of belonging to the children. And we'll probably talk just a little bit further in another point, a little bit more about the love to the children. But I just wanted to bring this out, that the love of your wife is so paramount in the stability of your children. All right, the third thing then that a father should be is a leader. A father in the home needs to be one that can lead his family. He's the one that takes responsibility for the spiritual and the material and the social aspects of the home. To a large extent, how he how fervent he is in his spiritual life and how consistent he is will determine the course that the children take. God said of Abraham, "For I know him that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord." You know, I believe it's in the father's place to help the children to recognize the existence of God and to instill in them, hopefully, a desire to love and to serve him. And if the father doesn't do this, then the children are not likely to learn how to serve God either. I was thinking this evening a little bit back a number of years ago when after my first wife had passed away, and I was trying to deal with the five children that I had at that time. My second daughter was coming to the age of accountability, and I didn't know whether she really understood the sinful nature and everything about it. So I'd be to bed at night, and she would come. She'd say, "Dad, I there's some things bothering me." I said, "Well, sure, let's talk about it." And so we'd talk about it. And I thought maybe there were just certain instances in her heart where she was troubled, and so we would pray about it, and I would think that would take care of it. Because that was kind of the experience I had as a 10-year-old, that, you know, I felt convicted, but was convicted not necessarily because I was a sinner of a sinful nature, but because of some things I had done. So I approached it from that angle. That didn't satisfy her. She'd come again. And I tried to help her to peace. And finally, I began to realize that she really knew that she was a sinner and that she needed to be saved by grace. And so I went through the plan of salvation with her. And she committed her heart and life to the Lord. And then she says, "Now, am I a Christian?" I said, "Yes, you are." But, you know, fathers, I think that is so important that we be sensitive to the spiritual journey of our children. And to try to determine whether they are ready for that step or whether they just simply need to confess their sins, their wrongdoings, shall I say, to their parents and go on in their innocent state. All right, so the father needs to be a leader. And many decisions fall on the shoulders of the father. And both the wife and the children appreciate and look up to a man that is decisive. If a man kind of hem-haws around too much and says, "Well, I don't quite know. This one just has me puzzled. I'm just not quite sure what we ought to do." And if you're undecided too long, they're going to lose respect for your ability to think through a problem. Now, I'm not saying you should jump to quick conclusions, but I will say this, that God has made us men in such a way, given us the ability to look at major issues and come to a quick, decisive answer. Now, no, I'm not going to say that. I was going to say I'm sorry, sisters, but I'm not really sorry, because you have such a vital role to balance that. But not to you has been given. To you has been given more of an ability to feel what the end result is going to be of something. And so, fathers, when your mind is made up, don't change it, unless it is for a very good and a definite reason. And one very good reason to change it is that helpmeet that God has given you. If she brings to you some concerns and says, "Well, what about this?" And my wife did this often. You know, I would think I'd thought through something, and we would talk about it, and she said, "Well, yeah, but what about this? Oh, yeah. What about that? I hadn't thought about that." And so let's not be so bullheaded that we can't be molded and shaped with the helper that God's given to us. But after evaluating any opposing principle, do not change your mind. And a child will find security only when he or she has a father that will not yield to pressure. They may coax, they may beg, they may plead, but decide and stick with it. They will follow a leader that knows what he believes and sticks with it. I know my daughter at times has kind of shaken her head as she sees some children that manipulate their parents. And she tells others, she said, when Dad said it, that was it. You could not change his mind. Now, I don't know. Maybe that's stubbornness. But I like to think it's steadfastness. Is that all right? Will you go with me on that? All right. But this needs to be done in kindness. It needs to be done in firmness. And being a leader does not mean lording over and trying to get all the benefit I can get personally out of this and telling somebody to do this and expect them to jump. It's not arranging things for my own benefit. It's not an avenue for selfishness. Now, in giving the qualifications for a bishop, Paul told Timothy in 1 Timothy 3:4, one that ruleth well his own house, having his children in subjection with all gravity. Now, the word rule there, one that ruleth over his own house, that can sound a little bit harsh, but that's not really what it's saying. It says, the word rule has a thought of to stand before, and by implication, to practice, to maintain, to be over. And so if one is going to rule his own house, he's going to practice those things himself. He's going to stand before his children, and he's going to be over them. All right. A fourth thing that a father should be is a teacher. Not only a father, not only a teacher in the things he says, but in the life that he lives. You know, there's multitudes of things for children to learn, such as good habits and manners and proper speech and industry and many spiritual truths. Here again, my mind went back to the early days of my first marriage. My first wife had a father who was very, very strong in teaching his children table manners. And this fellow here came into that marriage not quite as polished as what his wife was on table manners. And I could give you a humorous example or two. But I thought about that as I was thinking about this subject, how her father taught them how to do that. Maybe that seems like a insignificant thing in a way, but not really. There's good habits, there's proper speech, there's industry, spiritual truths that we as fathers need to teach. And it's largely the father's responsibility to oversee the education of his child, whether it's lessons in the home, in the school, or the church. Whatever environment that child is put in, it's going to have an effect on his learning. And again, the mother plays such a vital role in teaching. And I will say this somewhat with shame, somewhat with remorse. I found myself leaving much of the teaching up to her and neglecting the fact that the ultimate responsibility of teaching the children was mine. So fathers, take heed. It is your responsibility to see that they are taught right, to see that they're put in the right environment. Take time to answer questions. And I don't know if your 2 or 3 year old is anything like mine were. It seemed like there is no end to questions, to where you almost become exasperated. But answer those questions. Be interested in what your child is learning in school. Be alert to areas where they might not be learning as much as they should. And you know, I'm so thankful for the truths that our children learn in Sunday school. I'm also grateful for the privilege of our churches to have our own schools. But I know that as a father, too often, I relied on these good institutions of learning, on the Sunday school, on the Christian day school, and I was not as actively engaged as I could have been or should have been in teaching myself. All right? Number five, need to be a companion. Every child needs someone that they can confide in. Someone that's interested even in their little problems. You know, it takes time to be a father. It's been said that if you don't have time to play with your children, you don't have time to be a father. And I used to play some with my children, particularly my older ones. But I'm sure I could have done more of that. But do you really know your child? Have you taken time to understand him or her? Are your children just something to that they just get in the way? And you tell them, you know, shut up, get out of the way. You're a bother. I've got things to do. Just go on, find something else to do. I don't have time for you. You know, in reality, your family wants you, not the money that you earn or the things you provide. Do things together as a family. You know, it might be something as simple as a picnic in the backyard, or maybe a walk, some nature trail, or a weekend getaway. Many things that you can do as a family. But beyond that, do things individually with each child, and let that child know that he or she is special in your eyes, and that they have your undivided attention at times. And this is one area that I feel very blessed in recent years here. My youngest son, lots of times we'll eat lunch together, just the two of us, and we'll be home there. We just talk about a lot of things and have a lot of interaction. That just that blesses my heart, and I'm so glad for him. And but you know, when there's a number of children, it's a little bit hard to meet the need of each one individually as we should. Someone has said that a man's success is demonstrated when he walks up the path leading home and his children run with eagerness to meet him and his wife smiling lovingly greets him at the door. You know, what a contrast that is to those children who run and hide when their father comes because they know they're going to be berated. They know it might even be beaten. They don't know what to expect. But when children can run and welcome their father home, what a blessing that is. Now, I remember with regret some instances, particularly with my older children, some things they wanted me to do with them, some things they wanted me to be a part of in their life. But I was busy. I felt I needed to keep to the job. You know, I had a family to support. And then I had church responsibilities that needed attention. And at times I let them know, you know, I'm just too busy. But maybe sometime we will. You know when sometime comes? It doesn't come. And I found that again and again. I also remember with satisfaction and joy some of the experiences with my younger children from my second wife. When the Lord blessed us with children, I determined it's going to be different. I'm going to take time. My business was more established. I had still lots of things to do church-wise and family-wise, but I'm going to take time for these little youngsters. And so I did. I tried to do things with them and just notice them and different things. I can still remember going into the house from the office. Their office was just across the yard. I go into the house. And so I was going to go in for just a few minutes and see what was going on and go back out. And my little 2-year-old chap stood at the door, guarded the door, and would not let me out. So I tried to get around him, and he grabbed a hold of my pant leg and just hang on. Well, I finally had to disengage myself and go anyhow. But you know, there was a relationship that developed there at a young age that has paid huge dividends. And I would just like to encourage you fathers that have that opportunity yet to develop a close relationship with those little ones. Number 6, fathers need to be a protector. You know, the world is full of evil. And in many ways, it seeks to destroy the home. It seeks to destroy the mother, the children. And God has given to us as fathers the responsibility to be the protector, to stand as guard. And the father is normally larger and has features and characteristics that lend themselves to protection. Now, we're not living in the pioneer days, not living in the days like we saw over there at the Folk Center today, where maybe the father needed to protect his family more from the harsh elements, maybe even wild beasts. But I believe that today there are more important things to protect our family from than a coyote or a bear or something. It's the evil society that we live in. And I believe that as fathers, we need to stand as guards. We need to be a wall between the ravenous world that would seek to destroy and our family. And it's up to the father to set the tone for a sense of security. Now, there's a blessing to come home. You're out in the wicked world, and you're rubbing shoulders with those who do not uphold the standards of the gospel. And then to come home to a home where there's godliness and there's love and there's peace, it's a tonic that cannot be improved upon. And so as fathers, we need to guard questionable associates, the type of reading and influences that we have from day to day. Today, the internet and the smartphones and all of this is such a danger. And our homes need to be a haven. We need to guard. Quite a number of years ago, there was a brother younger than me, had a daughter. And so he came to me and he said, here's a book. I was just kind of wondering what you think about this book. So I kind of looked at it. Well, I said, I don't know. It looks pretty raunchy to me. He said, that's kind of what I thought. He said, my daughter borrowed it from one of your daughters from your house. Huh. So what do you do with that? I was not a guard of the bookshelf. And so I think it's just things we need to be alert to. All right. The father needs to, as protector, he needs to, let's see, just a moment here. We need to have our families be able to look to us in complete confidence and trust. All right. Now, the seventh thing is you need to be a provider. And God has given the major responsibilities of making a living and providing for the needs of the family to the father. And we find that in Genesis 3, how that God told Adam that he put a curse upon him and that he would have to work for his sustenance. Genesis 3, verses 17 to 19. And unto Adam he said, because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife and hast eaten of the tree which I commanded thee, saying, thou shalt not eat of it. Cursed is the ground for thy sake. In sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy life. Thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth to thee, and thou shalt eat the herb of the field. In the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread, till thou return unto the ground. For out of it wast thou taken, for dust thou art, and unto dust shalt thou return. And so the curse was on Adam and on his labor. And so he needed to be the provider for his family. 1 Timothy 5, 8 says, but if any provide not for his own, especially those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. So providing for the material needs of the family can really be demanding. I'm sure you're all aware of that, men. I know you're aware of that. And it's difficult to make ends meet. and still spend time with the family as you should. But you must, if you're going to bring them up in the nurture and admonition of God. God didn't promise it would be easy. And because of the curse, we eat our bread in sorrow and earn it by the sweat of our brow. You know, often children don't have the concept of what the father does to sustain them. And I think it's probably different today. I don't know exactly how it is here at Strawberry, Arkansas. But I know in our setting there at home, probably most fathers would work away from home. And so the children don't really see the occupation that they're occupied in much of the time. But you know, providing for our family is more than bringing a paycheck home. It's more than providing material goods. A true provider will make sure that the spiritual needs of the family are being taken care of. He will give guidance where the family should find fellowship and social interaction. You might even give guidance and say, you know, I don't think we're going to go to that family reunion this summer because there are too many there that are just immodest in their dress. It's not really a good place for us to be. So I think we will do something different than go to that family reunion. I think sometimes we need to do that. So there can be activities that can be harmful, and we need to provide an alternate. Here, a number of years back, there was a family in our church that had, I believe it was 5 foster children at that time, and it was in the fall, and the Children's Services was putting on a Halloween party for foster children. Well, of course, their foster children were invited. They weren't required to be there, but he wanted to provide something for them. And he called me. He says, What shall I do? He said, I don't feel comfortable in sending these or in taking these children to this Halloween party. Is there something that I could do with these 5 children that would be more of a benefit, something that would be of interest to them? And so I thought about that a little bit. We talked about it. And finally, together we kind of came up with an idea. There was a place that where there was a corn maze, you know, where you, a corn patch where there's a path that goes through. There was a wagon where they could go and have a wagon ride through the corn and the pumpkins, and it was in the fall there. And so they did that. And he reported back to me. He said, you know, we just had a really good time. Now, there was a father, even though he was a foster father, but there was a father that was a provider for his family and a protector. All right, then we come to the 8th point, and maybe this is what you was waiting for all along. A father needs to be a disciplinarian, needs to lead out in the correction of the children. Now, the mother will often spend more time, and maybe she can't, with the children, she can't always wait for father to come home to correct them. And so maybe she will correct them herself. Now, I believe that it's the father's responsibility to set bounds, but in consultation with his wife. And then the mother should as much as possible see that this is carried out whenever he's absent. The father will represent more strictness and more firmness, usually more than what the mother does. But it's through this that the child is prepared for the rigors of adult life. A disciplined child is a happier child because he knows his boundaries. Sometimes a question is asked, well, how early should discipline begin with a child? And I'm not sure what your answer would be. I would say that I use the word discipline. Maybe I should say training. But I believe that it begins at birth. You know, when that little baby cries when you put it in that bath water for the first time, and you go ahead and give it a bath anyhow, you're telling that child that, you know, you're not going to just get your way by crying. And it'll take a little while for that to soak in. And so I think there's more damage done by trying to cater to the whims of a child, of a baby, than by trying to establish some guidelines to go by. Many times just a little bit of firmness is all that's necessary for a small child. Hold the child tight so that They don't have the freedom to flail around. And then when it comes time for, and I'm not saying what age this should be, I know in my experience the first time that I would have administered physical discipline varied a lot from one child to another. But make sure the child is not hungry, doesn't have a wet diaper, some other miserable condition, and then administer discipline carefully and firmly. That first pat will startle that child. It's new, and it doesn't know what it's all about, and it needs to be repeated maybe two or three times before the child learns that it's corrective. But be careful. Fathers particularly, be careful not to be too rough. You have so much more strength than a little child. Discipline needs to be done in love, but love is exercised through discipline. You know, if a child broke its leg and cried and begged that it wouldn't be set because it was going to hurt, you'd say, well, no, we're still going to go ahead and do it because if we don't do that, you're going to be a cripple. Well, the same thing is true in the life of a child. If the discipline is withheld because it's going to hurt the child, then it's going to make a spiritual and an emotional cripple of that child. Proverbs 13:24 says, "He that spareth his rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes." And so here we come back to the matter of love. I said fathers, you need to love their mothers, but there needs to be love for the children, because they're going to feel an insecurity and an instability if they are not loved. Now, often the first time that a father will punish a child, it's maybe even almost more hurtful for the mother. And yet, mothers, you need to be supportive, even though you retain a tender heart toward your little one. And you know, if punishing a child is not a painful ordeal to the parent, it's not effective. If you get pleasure out of disciplining a child, there's something wrong with your love. After punishment, show love to the child. And I know as I look back, you know, there were times that I exercised discipline while my emotions were still stirred. Not very effective. Don't do that. Let things calm down a little bit. Okay, I'd like to give a couple do nots. Do not belittle or humiliate, especially in public. I don't think that our children ought to be made a public example that the parents belittle or humiliate them in public. Do not punish out of anger or embarrassment. And I've seen that, you know, a parent is embarrassed, and so they need to take care of this child. Correct for disobedience and rebellion, not for childish mistakes or inability. Sometimes a child makes a innocent mistake or doesn't have the ability to do something. That's not the time to punish, but when there's disobedience, when there's rebellion, that's where there needs to be correction. Obedience on the part of the child is very important. Colossians 3:20 says, "Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing unto the Lord." And they need to be taught immediate obedience, not just after you raise your voice. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, just go walk around Walmart for a while and see what you hear. I was thinking about something again today. My name is Jason. You know that. There are hardly any other Jasons in my generation. It was a very unusual name. There must have been something about me that just really attracted people, because about 30 years later, why, there were Jasons all over the place. I don't know how that came about. But I think it was one year Jason was the top name. Well, I would go to town, and I'm tending my business, looking for something, and suddenly there'll be some mother that will just, "Jason, you..." And I jump, you know, what did I do wrong? But that mother does not have control of her child. And you know, the threats that go on, and if you don't do so-and-so, I'll do this and that. And oh my, there could be a lot more peace if they would just be consistent in their discipline. If a child doesn't obey, don't just look the other way and hope the problem goes away. It needs to be faced squarely. You know, if obedience is learned in the home, it's going to make it easier in the school, the church, society. And I think that rules need to be well defined so that there's not so many gray areas, but they know when they have transgressed. I'd like to say just a little bit yet before closing about respect. It seems to me, and this probably isn't true in Arkansas. I know you Southern folk, if that's what you are, you're very respectful people. But I'll tell you, in the West, we have some children that just are not very respectful. And I think we need to set some realistic boundaries and use some consistent strictness to foster respect. And a failure to do that is going to leave a child at sea. So I would also say if we're too rigid, without good solid reasons, we can drive a child away from us rather than help them to develop respect. All right, so let's be consistent in our discipline of children. And too often, discipline is dependent on the mood of the parent. One day we may expect exact obedience, and the next we become pretty lackadaisical. They can get by with most anything. The ultimate goal in child training is this: to help that child to learn how to become or how to make his own decisions that he's not able to do at a young age, but when he becomes adult, he can make his own decisions, and those decisions are based on the truth of the Word of God. Eventually, he's going to go out from under your roof. He's going to go out into society. He's going to go out as an arrow that is sent, never to return. And is that arrow going to miss its mark, or is it going to wander? I'd like to read in closing yet Psalm 127. This is a very familiar psalm and yet so full of meaning. Psalm 127, it says, "Except the Lord build a house, they labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh but in vain. It is vain for you to rise up early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows, for so he giveth his beloved sleep. Lo, children are an heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. As arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. Happy is a man that hath his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies in the gate." Yes, children are an heritage of the Lord. Children have been given to us as a gift. They have not been given to us for us to lord over them, but they are the Lord's. The fruit of the womb is his reward. But I think so often of this picture of children being as arrows, and blessed is a man that has his quiver full of them. I well remember, how many years ago has it been now? My first child to leave home and get married. That morning, as we were at the breakfast table, we were around the table as a family together one more time before she went out of the door, out of the home, not to return again under my authority. That authority was being transferred to her husband. And you have feelings of wondering, you know, how is this going to be? Is she prepared? And I like this picture. Now, I'm not a bow hunter, and I think some of you probably are, so maybe you should get up here and describe this. But I think about an archer who takes a bow, and he has a string, and he has that arrow. And he pulls back and he aims toward a mark. And finally, let's go. And once that arrow is in the air, there's nothing more that archer can do. It is gone. Is it going to hit its mark? And to me, that has been such a picture of what happens when a child goes out from the home. No more. Yes, there can be influences, but that mark that it is headed for is pretty well set. And so I'd like to say in conclusion this evening that to bring them up implies personal involvement. It doesn't mean to send them off somewhere to be taught and to be trained, but to know your child, to know the heart of your child. And yes, fathers, when it gets to that point, I've had this experience where I knew the heart of my daughter enough that when a young man came around, I pretty well knew whether that daughter was interested or not. Now, not with all of them, but to me, that's a real blessing. Walk with them and talk with them and lead and direct. And if you are faithful to God, may He grant you many blessings. I believe He will. And an eternal home with your posterity as they are faithful to the principles that you have exhibited as you brought them up. All right, this evening, this probably does not necessarily lend itself to a formal invitation. But I thought maybe it would be an opportunity if I really haven't given you an opportunity for testimony. Might just take a few moments if anybody has a word of testimony, something the Lord has impressed on your heart and mind, maybe even last week before the meeting's ever started. If there's just somebody with a word of testimony, we'll take a moment or two before we close the service.